it certainly makes the pursuit of materialism empty and meaningless, at least as a reason for living. There's got to be something more important than that.
And thankfully, there is something more important. That was psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson sharing just a brief excerpt, just a clip from a major presentation recorded back in 1985, a message that he called A Father Looks Back. This is Focus on the Family. I'm Mike Trout. Welcome to our broadcast as we hear the second half of this message, which Dr. Dobson delivered before a sold-out crowd at Riverfront Coliseum in Cincinnati. What a wonderful evening that was, as he and his wife Shirley shared what we called an evening with Dr. James and Shirley Dobson. Their messages that night became two portions of the film series called Turn Your Hearts Toward Home. I'm sure many of you have seen that film series. This particular presentation is called A Father Looks Back, and Dr. Dobson is sifting through all of his major achievements in life and searching for those handful of things that really do matter, the few precious gems that will sparkle for an eternity. As we move into part two, we're going to turn from the lighter side of his presentation toward those more serious reflections, and I encourage you to maybe have a box of Kleenex handy, because this is guaranteed to be a very reflective and insightful presentation, one that will probably cause you to think seriously about what are your priorities, and perhaps a tear or two will be shed. Here's our host, Dr. James Dobson, with part two of A Father Looks Back.
Shirley and I got married at a time when we had absolutely nothing, and it looked for about 10 years like we were going to keep it. We didn't have any financial problems because we didn't have any finances. But I finally got through USC and quit paying those enormous school bills and joined the staff of USC School of Medicine and began writing, and things started changing for us. And we have tasted now some of the things that people hunger for. But part of the analysis of the 40s has to do with the meaning of life, and that doesn't provide a whole lot. And the Lord's used some interesting ways to get that message across to me, even a game of Monopoly. You know, when I was a kid, I used to love to play Monopoly. I'm sure some of you did as well. But I hadn't played the game in over 30 years, and our teenage daughter one night brought the game home, and she said, "Dad, there's a new game out called Monopoly. I think you would enjoy it." And I said, "Why not?" And we sat down to play the first game of Monopoly that I'd played in over 30 years, and the old thrill came back. And I started winning, folks, and I had Boardwalk and Park Place, and I had Illinois and Indiana and Kentucky and St. Charles and St. James, and I mean, I even had Baltic and Mediterranean. And I started putting little greenhouses all over the board, and they turned very quickly into big red hotels, and I was getting money like crazy, and I had it in my pockets, and I had it under the board. I had $500 bills in my shoe. And my family was squirming, and I was loving it. It was greed that was coming back on me again. And it wasn't long before it suddenly ended. I mean, boom, boom, boom. Danae and Shirley, Ryan was already gone to bed. Danae and Shirley threw the dice, and they hit my hotels two or three times in a row. And before I knew it, I had won. And I'd been such a lousy sport about the whole thing that they went to bed and made me put the game away. So I'm sitting there at 12 o'clock at night putting the game away, and I've got a very empty feeling. And then the Lord spoke to me. It was not an audible voice, but you know it when you've heard from Him. And He spoke to me. This is what He said. He said, "Jim, pay attention, because I'm about to give you a lesson. That's not just the game of Monopoly that you're playing there. That's the game of life. You sweat and you strain and you save and you build and you grow and you get bank accounts and you get property and you get ERISA and retirement programs and a piece of the rock and all this stuff. And then you make a bad move. Riding down the freeway, you make a sudden turn when you shouldn't have. Boom, boom, boom. You put it all back in the box. Every last dime goes back in the box. Every dime. There are no U-Haul it trailers that follow the hearse. The Egyptians tried to take it with them. That's what the pyramids are all about. But unless somebody gets there first, you go back to that Egyptian tomb and you'll find everything they stored there among the grinning white bones because they couldn't take it with them. And we can't take it with them either. And I want to tell you all something very personally. This is perhaps telling you more about who I am than I want you to know. But if I don't allow you to see who I really am, I can't help you. I'm not at all sure that I want to give a whole lot to my children either, because it takes a steady hand to hold a full cup. And I can't think of any better way to destroy them than to deprive them of that need to build and save and be disciplined and grow and dedicate themselves to a task. I think we're so busy giving our kids what we didn't have as kids, we forget to give them what we did have as kids. Well, that leads me inexorably to the second conclusion that I've drawn at this time. And the conclusion that I've drawn that outranks all others is that nothing in life matters except love for God and His Son, Jesus Christ, and love for mankind, beginning with my own family. This is why I've been home for the last 7 years, because these years are passing so fast and I wanted to be there to have that influence on my kids and see them grow up and to instill those values that I care about. Danae is now in college, Ryan is going into high school, and the years have passed so rapidly. I know so quickly now that the skateboard will be warped and standing over in the corner of the garage. The bicycle tires will be flat. The swing set is already gone. We'll go through Christmas and there will not be the two stockings hanging there. I know that. I accept that. I'm not fighting that. I wouldn't try to hold my kids back if I could. I want them to grow and become independent and live their own lives. I understand the process, but I'll tell you this. When those two children are gone, something precious will have gone out of my life because I have valued those years with my kids so much. And by being home the last 7 years, I have their childhood videotaped up here in my mind. You can't see it, but I can see it. I can turn it on and I see a little 5-year-old boy come up to me. I'm sitting in my study. I'm watching a football game. It's New Year's Day. USC is just beating Ohio State to death. This little boy comes up to me and he says, "I want to get up in your lap." And I say, "No way." He says, "How come?" And I say, "Because I have to be kind of careful about who I let climb on my lap. That's why." And he says, "Who can climb on you?" And I said, "Well, you wouldn't know him." He said, "Yes, I would." I said, "Well, he's a kid with blonde hair." He says, "I got blonde hair." I say, "I know, but this is a kid with blonde hair and blue eyes." He said, "I got blue eyes." I said, "Yeah, I know, but this is a kid with blonde hair and blue eyes, and his name's Ryan." He said, "That's my name." I said, "I know, but you wouldn't understand. You don't know this kid. He's a kid with blonde hair, blue eyes, his name's Ryan, and he's my son. He's my only son, the only son I will ever have. He is the only boy in the world that can climb on me anytime he wants to without asking." He says, "I got blonde hair and blue eyes. My name's Ryan. I'm your son. You love me. Move over. I'm coming up." We played that game for 4 years, 500 times. He loved the game. That's why I don't have to think to tell you about it. I've been through it over and over again because it said something to Ryan about him being special to me. But I have that videotape. That's up here in my head. I can turn that off. I turn on another videotape. and I see a little girl coming home from school. She's 6 years old. She has little pigtails out the side here, but they're all messed up. And her dress is disheveled. And she's got one sock down around one shoe. And she comes in, and she's so happy to see us, and she hugs her mother, and she hugs me. And she goes in and sits down at the table, and Shirley brings her some sandwiches and some milk. And she's sitting there, and she's eating it. And I'm watching her. And she doesn't know that. She doesn't really know yet just how much I love her. Perhaps someday she will comprehend it, but she doesn't understand it at 6 years of age. That's just a passing moment. It's gone. But I've got it right here. Nobody can take it away from me. I've got it here because I was home to see it. And I'm thankful for that. Let me tell you one other thing about Danae, if I can. She absolutely loved her childhood. She loved it. But alas, she turned 13 years of age one day, and she went into her bedroom and closed the door, and she stacked up her records and all of her little treasured toys and put them on top of it, and she carried them next door and left them in front of Ryan's door where he was sleeping. And she put a note on the top, and she said, "Dear Ryan, these are yours now. Take good care of them like I have. Love, Danae." Shirley found the note, and she brought it to me. I was in my study, and we sat, and I read it, and we both cried. Because we heard in that note the door of childhood gently shut. And once it closes, no power on the face of the earth can open it again. And again, I thank the Lord that I was there to witness that process. But I'm not a perfect father. I do not have perfect kids. Shirley is not a perfect mother. And we struggle in the same ways that you do. We struggle to find something that we could do together as a family. Have you had that problem? We tried everything. You know, we weren't content to just find recreation each one of us wanted to do. But we were trying to find something we all enjoyed doing together. And we had a hard time finding it. We tried hiking. That didn't work. We tried bowling. Believe me, that didn't work. But we finally hit on skiing as our thing. And it has been a marvelous thing for our family. You just cannot imagine how much we have enjoyed going over those mountains together with the wind in our face, the beautiful scenery that God has created. We've had some of our most wonderful times, the four of us together, skiing. But I need to tell you all something about skiing, for those of you who don't know. On the first day, when you've got young children, that can be one of the most frustrating events in the entire world. Because you can guess who gets to carry the skis, buckle the boots, buy the lift tickets, get the locker, park the car, make three trips back to the house, bundle them up in all those clothes, then take them to the bathroom. All that stuff, it's an enormous task. And on this particular day, my kids were about to drive me crazy. They were struck by a sudden wave of childish irresponsibility, and they were losing skis and dropping stuff and forgetting gloves, and I was on their backs. I mean, I was yelling at these kids and crabbing at them and riding them, and I violated everything I write about. Does that make you feel better? I took them up to the ski lodge. Shirley was already up there, and I let them out. I said, "Go have a good time." Slammed the door. I drove the car back down the hill to park it. And all the way down the hill, I was talking to the Lord. I was saying, Lord, what am I going to do with these kids that you gave me? You ever ask that question? Just a little irritated at him for giving me these kids. And he didn't say anything. He sometimes lets me talk to him that way. I really wasn't being disrespectful. I parked the car, and I got out, and I walked back down to a little pickup area where a flatbed truck comes and picks people up and takes them back up the mountain. And when I walked to this spot, there were about 8 or 10 people there. And among them was a girl about 17 years of age. And she was saying strange things, nonsense things, especially the word whomever. She was saying, whomever, whomever, just this word over and over again. And I thought she was on a bad drug trip or something, and the other people were kind of pulled back away from her, so she was just kind of standing there all by herself saying these words. And then she turned and looked at me, and I saw the unmistakable look of mental retardation in her eyes. About that time, the truck came, and we all got up in the back of the truck. And she stumbled over there and got in the truck, too. And she stood right in the center of that flatbed truck and looked up the mountain and continued to say, whomever. Here she is with her shoulders back saying, whomever, whomever. And there was a visible rejection by the other people that were there. They were young. You could tell by the sneers on their face. They kind of moved back from her. And they looked at her and then looked at each other as if to say, who's the crazy that we've got with us? And then I realized that the big man who was standing near her was her father. And he did something I will never forget. He took about 3 steps toward her. He just engulfed that girl in his arms. And he put his big hand on the back of her head and just pressed it gently to his chest. And he looked down at her and he said, yeah, babe, whomever. And I had to turn my face away from that crowd to hide the moisture in my eyes. Because you know what that father was saying? He was not talking to his daughter at all. He was talking to us. That father had seen the same rejection, the same sneers that I had seen. And he was giving us a message. You know what he was saying? He's saying, yeah, it's true. You're right. She's retarded. We can't hide that. We long since quit trying to hide that. She's retarded. I know she won't write the books. She won't sing the songs. She won't accomplish a whole lot. She's already out of school. We did the best we could. But I want to tell you people something. That's my girl. And I love her. And I'm not ashamed to be identified with her. Yeah, babe. Whomever. The love of that father for that retarded girl flooded out of his soul and filled mine and mine outward to my children. And I said, okay, Lord, I get the message. 2 weeks later, I was on national television. I was given 4.5 minutes to answer such questions as, how did the family get into the trouble it's in and how do we get out of it? I couldn't have answered the questions in 4.5 weeks. But I tell you this much, I know the answer. It has something to do with what that father was feeling for his girl, his retarded girl, on that day. It'll heal a home. It'll solve parent-child relationships. It'll even help you cope with the tragedy of mental retardation. Fathers who are here, don't let these years get away from you. If your children are still at home, don't let them slide through your fingers. On the other end of life, looking back, there will be no compensation. To those of you here tonight who are achievement-oriented and you've reached your goal, I don't mean to insult you. Let me tell you that I admire you. You've worked hard. You've gotten there because of self-discipline and self-control and hard work and long hours. But to some degree, I have too. And reverberating in my head these last 7 years has been one question I cannot get away from. And that question is, so what? Or an infinitely more important question, now what? For the wind passeth over it, and it is gone, and the place thereof shall know it no more. The wisest man who ever lived, other than Jesus Christ, Solomon, had it all. He had money, he had fame, he had power, he was a king. He had everything there is to want. He summed it all up at the end of his life in the book of Ecclesiastes. And what did he call it? Vanity. Vanity, vanity, vanity. It's all vanity. There's nothing else but vanity. You see what this does? It trivializes everything temporal. Vanity. 1970, I published my first book, Dare to Discipline. My name across the bottom, beautiful green jacket, nice design on the cover, my picture on the back. Pretty heady stuff for a guy 33 years old. A guy came up to me just the other day and he said, "You've really arrived." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I found a copy of Dare to Discipline at a garage sale for 35 cents. That's what it all comes down to. Now, folks, I really kind of fooled you a little bit tonight. I have kind of told you that I was talking about the midlife crisis and the midlife years. I'm really not. I'm talking about something far more important than that. I'm talking about the stuff of life. And it's appropriate for all of us. It's appropriate whether you are a Christian or an atheist or an agnostic. You still have to deal with the questions I'm talking about, like, who am I and where am I going? What's the meaning of life? And especially into what will I drop the remaining years of my life? The experience of the last 7 years has said to me, go back to your roots, back to your faith. And in that faith, I find meaning and purpose and dignity and self-esteem, self-respect, self-control, an identity. I know who I am because I know whose I am. And I've come down at this stage of my life with only two objectives for what's left. The first is to serve my fellow man, beginning with my own family. And the second is to be acceptable to the God who made me and to hear those words. How I want to hear those words, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And nothing else will stand the scrutiny of time.
Well, that was the enthusiastic response to a message by our host, Dr. James Dobson, from a crowd of 16,000 plus at Riverfront Coliseum in Cincinnati back in the middle 80s. This was one of the key films in the Turn Your Hearts Toward Home film series. By the way, much of this material is included in the revised and expanded book by Dr. Dobson called Straight Talk, What Men Need to Know, What Women Should Understand. You're listening to Focus on the Family. I'm Mike Trout. This program is provided regularly by Focus on the Family. Our producer for the series has been James Werning. Engineering and production were handled by Brian Cooper and John Doric. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Each of us looks forward to having you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.